Welcome to Behind the Music, brought to you by the Wichita Falls Symphony Orchestra. We're thrilled to kick off a new season filled with a wide variety of music, from familiar favorites to pieces that might surprise you. This podcast gives you a sneak peek into each concert, featuring conversations with some of the amazing artists who bring this music to life. Whether you're a seasoned concert goer or new to classical music, we're excited to share these insights and stories with you. So let's get started. I'm pleased to introduce your host, the music director and conductor of the Wichita Falls Symphony Orchestra, Fuad Fakhoury.
Welcome to this episode of Behind the Music. I'm your host, Fuad Fakhoury. We are here today to talk to Todd Giles. Todd is the professor of English at Midwestern State University, and we're here to talk about our opening concert of the season on October 18th at First Baptist Church. Now, a little bit of background about Todd. Todd graduated from Texas Tech University and the University of Kansas, and has been teaching American literature at MSU Texas since 2012. In 2019, Professor Giles started writing the WFSO program notes and has recently begun recording them as podcasts as well. Additionally, Todd served on the WFSO board from 2015 through 2018. He also hosts two special two-hour classical programs on KCCU-FM prior to each one of our concerts. Thank you for joining us today, Todd.
Thanks very much, Fuad, for having me on Behind the Music. And I wanted to just take a quick moment, too, to thank Tim for all of the great production work you do on Behind the Music. I know the listeners of the WFSO greatly appreciate your good work.
Well, you are very welcome, and it is a true pleasure.
Wonderful. It is, you know, one thing that I really wanted to sort of get into before we talk about the music is a little bit about your background specifically, and specifically how you went into becoming an English professor, as well as also having the interest in music, which leads you to write program notes or go and maybe you can talk a little bit about your program on the radio, the two-hour program that discusses music as well.
Yeah, sure. So I started out as an English student at Texas Tech. And I'm always embarrassed to share this with people in the music biz, but I'm actually not a musician. And I know that's kind of ironic for somebody who hosts a classical show and actually writes program notes, but my love of classical music began in one of those core classes at Tech. It was music appreciation. And I used to listen to KOHM, the public radio station there broadcasting from Tech. And I'd call in, there was a jazz show that I liked, the Jazz Cafe, and I'd call in, and I guess I annoyed the guy often enough that he said, hey, why don't you come in and sit in with me and share some music with me on the air? And so I did, and it turns out he was actually looking for somebody to take over his spot. So that ended up turning into a part-time weekend evening director position where I was also afforded the opportunity to host a daily classical music show. From there, after graduation, I bounced around quite a bit. Columbia, Missouri was the next place I lived. And Columbia was really amazing because they've got three, or they did at the time, I'm not sure if one of them is still on the air. They had three public radio stations, KBIA broadcasting out of the University of Missouri. Stevens College had KWWC, where I hosted a jazz show. And then the community radio station, KOPN. And then from there, I was there for about 2 years. From there, I ended up in Wichita, Kansas, hosting a classical show and being operations director at KMUW. And then finally, I went back to grad school and eventually became an English professor. So that's the long of it, really.
I see. Well, I mean, you know, it makes sense, though. I mean, it makes sense that you would still want to retain some of your past experiences before you became an English professor and continue to really be involved with that. I mean, I'm assuming that's a big part of your life, right? I mean, it took a while of your development, right?
Yeah, Yeah, it really, KCCU has really kind of brought me home in a way. They broadcast out of Cameron University up in Lawton, and that's the Texoma NPR station down here. And it was a real homecoming for me in a way, because I realized that what I do as an English professor is very similar to what I do in writing the program notes. It's all about learning and education and sharing stuff that gets exciting to me. You know, I just literally ran over here from a short story class where we were all sitting on the floor in a circle talking about Willa Cather stories and, you know, sharing the conversation with you today. I think it's about learning and an appreciation of the arts, really, more than anything.
Yeah. And I mean, it's all about communication. The other thing that I wanted to really touch base on with you is for our season opener this October 18th, we're obviously performing selections of iconic film scores from Hollywood, as well as some TV classics. From your perspective and your experience, what is it about movie music that really resonates so strongly with audiences and makes it such a powerful concert experience?
You know, on the surface, that sounds like it should really have a really simple answer, but I don't know that it does. If you can bear with me as I kind of work through a couple different ideas, and maybe they'll be related, maybe not, I'm not quite sure. On the one hand, I think that film music, like popular music, works in a way to use a term that my students would use, to curate or help us develop kind of soundtracks to our own personal lives. And as a Gen Xer, it's really impossible for me to look back growing up and not have the scores of John Williams come to mind. You know, late 70s, early 80s, Star Wars, Superman, Jaws, E.T., Close Encounters, Indiana Jones, you know, all of this music, I think in many ways resonates, and it's very nostalgic, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's why I love them. And it's funny that you said, you know, Gen X. I mean, I'm part of that generation as well. And I was giving another interview about concert, this concert specifically. And I was asked about, you know, who the best composer that I prefer in this medium. And the first thing I could think about is John Williams. I mean, and the fact that we're so lucky to be living in the time where a composer like John Williams is writing music. He's such a prolific, and everything he writes, prolific composer, and everything he writes is just so great that we're really fortunate to be living during his time. On this concert, we have a few other composers that are less familiar. I think the music will be familiar, but the names might not be. And I always try to do things like that to the audience, to introduce them to things that they know but might not know who the composers are. One of them is Bernard Herrmann's. We're doing a suite from Psycho. And we're doing another piece, a short piece by Ennio Morricone, from a movie in 1980s movies called The Professional. It's a French movie, and it has this beautiful theme, Italian piece called Chi Mai. And I just wanted to sort of really expose our audiences to these pieces. Why do you think that music continues to resonate so strongly with audiences, even though they might not have heard those pieces or have seen those movies in a long, long time?
Okay, that's another interesting question. First off, let me just mention that I really do appreciate the fact that you do program composers that folks might not be familiar with. Let me address the Bernard Herrmann piece. It's Psycho. And since your listeners might not be familiar with him, they're certainly going to be familiar with the movies he was associated with. So a little bit of background on him. He was one of the golden age of Hollywood composers. Back in the 1930s, there was a large movement of European emigres fleeing the rising tide of Nazism. And artists, composers, thinkers alike, you know, they were having their voices silenced and even killed. So during this period in the 30s and early 40s, you've got composers like Franz Waxman, Miklos Rosa, Erich Wolfgang Korngold, and Bernard Herrmann as well. And you might not be familiar with those names, but certainly older listeners are going to be familiar with some of these films. Korngold, The Seahawk, Deception, The Adventures of Robin Hood, Ben-Hur by Miklos Rosa, the soundtrack, or film score rather, to El Cid, to Spellbound, Bride of Frankenstein was Waxman, A Place in the Sun. And so this is a really, really important, I mean, that's why it's called the Golden Age, a really important time. And Bernard Herrmann was part of this group. And there's some early interesting background about him. He started working at CBS Radio as their in-house composer in 1934. And then he met this crazy young guy by the name of Orson Welles. And yeah. They collaborated on The War of the Worlds. They collaborated on Citizen Kane. And, you know, frankly, if Herrmann, you know, never did anything after that, he'd still be iconic. But what he's really best known for is his long collaboration with Hitchcock. So you've got the film score to Psycho scheduled for the upcoming concert. That's 1960. The year before that, North by Northwest. The year before that, Vertigo. You know, the guy is just amazing. And I'll be honest with you, when I was writing the program notes and producing the KCCU show that's coming up, I really didn't want to listen to Psycho. I wanted to listen to some stuff that was a little less intense. But I think one of the things that's cool about Psycho, not only was the movie radically important in film history, Herrmann was interested in not producing these big, romantic, beautiful, lush scores, but rather he was interested in the music of people like Stravinsky and Hindemith and the great American composer Charles Ives. And so the music, particularly for Psycho, is ideal because he was embracing dissonance. He was using these short repeated patterns or ostinato, very sharp, angular string music. And we're all familiar with the iconic screeching violins, right, in the shower scene. And I think one of the reasons, to go back to your question of why does this music resonate, you know, I think probably more than any film music, the music from that scene in the shower of Psycho has probably been parodied more than any music that's been written. The Simpsons, National Lampoon's Vacation, Looney Tunes, Mel Brooks' High Anxiety. That's music that's a part of our cultural makeup in many ways.
Right, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's so funny that you brought North by Northwest. So really, and this is, I mean, maybe the listeners don't need to know this, but we're talking sort of frankly about how we put concerts together. I really wanted to do the music from North by Northwest because Psycho is done quite often in concerts. It's so famous. And you mentioned that screeching scene in the bathroom. And that's what we're doing at this concert. But North by Northwest has some incredible music. The reason that I didn't program it and haven't been able to program it is that it requires such a large orchestra. You know, we're talking about 6 or 8 horns. It's just an extended orchestra that it makes it almost cost prohibitive sometimes to really be able to put such a large orchestra to perform a movie concert. But I'm hoping that one day we'll be able to do that because just the music, as you mentioned, is just incredible. And it should be heard in the context of a symphonic hall where you actually get to really experience the music in all its glory, not just as, I wouldn't say secondary, but not as an accompaniment to a visual, but just as a standalone composer writing great music. So maybe in the future we'll get to do that. One other question I had for you is, many of the soundtracks for the Hollywood films were inspired by earlier composers. And I know you touched a little bit upon Stravinsky and Ives. What, in your opinion, are ways that movie scores reflect the styles of previous eras in music. I mean, specifically, what I'm trying to figure out to our audiences or listeners is how does this music really relate to the other music that we perform on a regular basis, like the Beethoven, the Brahms, the Mozart, etc.?
Okay, yeah, that's another interesting question. I think two things jump to mind, and I'll address both of them back to back. Program music is one thing, and then leitmotifs are another. So, and please, you know, since I've already confessed that I'm not a musician, just jump in and you know, correct me if I need some teasing out of these ideas. But program music or programmatic music is music that tells a story or depicts a setting or an idea that is non-musical and points outside of the music, as opposed to, say, Beethoven or Mozart. At least with most of their music, they're writing absolute music, which is music that really doesn't point beyond itself. So program music, I've got some examples. An early one would be the Four Seasons of Vivaldi, the Pastoral Symphony of Beethoven, the Lark Ascending, or A Lark Ascending, I can't remember which it is, by Ralph Vaughan Williams, Death and the Maiden by Schubert. I mean, there's a ton of programmatic music, and a lot of it actually is from the Romantic era, which is the era, really, I think, more than any that gets programmed on an international level at symphony concerts. And then the next thing, and this is going to bring John Williams back into the mix. So the second thing to touch on your question are leitmotif. Leitmotifs are short recurrent themes that are tied to a particular person, an idea, even a setting. They're kind of associational cues. And leitmotifs, again, are pointing back to the Romantic era. Think of Wagner's Ring Cycle, for example, or the Symphonie Fantastique by the other, you know, Romantic era composer, Berlioz, right? Mm-hmm. So John Williams uses them like crazy. Think about, and it's the 50th anniversary, think about the two-note leitmotif that heralds in the shark in Jaws, right? Star Wars, I think you've got programmed for the first concert, the Imperial March. You hear the Imperial March, you know Darth Vader's fixing to come on the scene, right?
That's right, absolutely, yeah.
Harry Potter, I think all of the main characters of Harry Potter have their own themes or leitmotifs. And so what this does is these themes add a sense of continuity and depth, I think, both to the musical scores on their own, but also to the whole visual element of the cinematic narrative. So leitmotifs are about association. They're about narrative flow. And even I think they're kind of, if you will, cues for our own emotional connection to certain characters.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's absolutely true. And I think that's probably what makes John Williams such a strong and really prolific is not the word, but I mean, he's just beyond the fact that he writes a lot of music. And he's very creative. He has the ability to manipulate characters in sound to where you don't even need to see Darth Vader on the screen. If he just plays the theme in the background, and even in a very ambiguous fashion, where you don't actually get to hear the pa 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 pa. I mean, he might use the chords behind the theme, or he might use the rhythm from that theme. But he can create the sense of something ominous happening while there's nothing on the screen that's happening. You could be looking at stars, which you typically do in Star Wars, like, you know, a screen of just stars. But you know something bad is about to come simply because he can manipulate the characters through sound. And I think that's what makes somebody like him such a unique composer.
So Williams was heavily influenced by Bernard Herrmann. And as, frankly, most of the people on your upcoming program were influenced by Herrmann. As I was writing the program notes, I pulled up YouTube. I wanted to revisit the shower scene, but I also wanted to watch the opening credits of the movie. This goes back to what you were just talking about, of being able to build a sense of menace when nothing's on the screen. If you recall, the beginning of Psycho is simply a slow pan of Phoenix, Arizona. Uh-huh. And there's this sense of menace in the music because he's using these little bits of dissonance. And if the pan happened with no music, you could put any music in the world and it would completely and utterly change the meaning of that 1 or 2 minutes of just panning across, you know, this cityscape. So I think this is one of the things I think that really makes cinematic music interesting, is its ability to evoke feelings, whether it's menace or whether it's feelings of joy or love or whatever the case might be.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, that you just encapsulated why we do these types of concerts, because they really resonate. I mean, on a superficial, very appealing, but yet on a superficial sort of plane, people hear them and love them because they're aware of them. You know, they're familiar with this music through watching the movies. But I think it goes far beyond that. And that's what I enjoy most about these concerts, is to really allow our listeners, our concert goers, our audiences to experience those pieces of music as artworks beyond just the fact that they're serving something that they're looking at on the screen and then hearing in the background this music. So, I'm really happy to be doing this, and I'm really, really very grateful for you to take your time to talk to me about this today. It's always a pleasure to talk to you about music and about program notes and your passion for music.
Oh, I always enjoy it too.
Thank you very much. Join us for the season opener at First Baptist Church on October 18th for Hollywood Hits, music from the movies that will feature iconic film music from Harry Potter, Beauty and the Beast, James Bond, Star Wars, The Simpsons, and many, many more selections. Tickets are available now by visiting our website and by calling the WFSO office. Also, please make sure you are subscribed to the podcast so you can get new episodes as soon as they are released.
Thank you, Maestro, and a big thanks to our listeners for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation and feel a little more connected to the music and the musicians who bring it to life. Be sure to follow us on social media to stay up to date with the latest from the Wichita Falls Symphony Orchestra. On behalf of everyone at the WFSO, I'm Tim Williamson. Until next time, we hope you find joy and inspiration in the power of music. See you soon at the Symphony.